Hey, this is Jay Young with King Operating. Have you ever considered paying less money in taxes? Would you like to do what the wealthy do and invest in oil and gas? Go on our website, kingoperating.com, and get my book about our model, ADD, Acquire, Develop, and Divest, or call our number 214-420-3000 to talk to somebody today about investing in oil and gas and saving money on your taxes.
The Jay Young Show is a weekly podcast featuring insightful discussions with anyone from big business CEOs, celebrities, to military heroes. Each interview is a personal conversation about business, life, and anything in between. And now, your host, Jay Young.
Hey everybody, welcome to the Jay Young Show. I am deeply honored tonight to bring you the guest, Sergeant First Class Officer, United States Army veteran and military hero, John Wayne Walding. He was born on the 4th of July, and his motto is, lean forward, fight hard. John, welcome to the show.
Jay, thanks for having me. I never take it lightly, the invitations to come speak to you, so whenever I say thank you, I mean it.
Hey, I appreciate that. I appreciate that. And I've known you for, I guess, three, 4 years now, and
we're
in each other in circles, and it's always been a pleasure talking to you, and you are definitely one of our biggest heroes. We're going to find out why here in just a minute. But I tell you what, it's always great talking to you. I think we met at I think you were talking at a big event that I was at. I think it was at the Pro Building.
Mm-hmm.
First time that we met. And then you go on a lot of different speaking engagements. And, first, I want to talk about all the different things that you've done, your heroism and all the different things you've done in Afghanistan. But first, I'd just kind of like to start off with, where did you grow up and what led you into the Army, if you don't mind?
Okay. Well, there was actually a documentary about where I grew up, and it's in Groesbeck, Texas, where we had 3,500 people, but a $10 million football field. So if you'd like to watch a documentary, there was a movie called Varsity Blues. Have you ever seen?
Oh yeah.
That was a joke.
That was you, John Wayne.
Yeah. Walton. Yeah. I'm Tweeter. Yeah.
Yeah.
But no, there's from a very small town, I grew up 20 miles outside of town, out in the middle of nowhere and grew up on, a farm and working cows, hauling hay and playing football. That's really, what it was like with me. I played baseball and ran track and other stuff, but I loved it. I loved the small town attitude where, I always knew I was wanting to do something bigger. And I never will forget after my birthday, I said, man, I need a real job. I need something that means more than what I'm doing. And that's whenever the Army, I went to the recruiter in Waco. And this kind of gives you an idea of my personality, Jay. My birthday is July 4th. July 5th, I decided to join the Army. August 16th, I was in basic training.
Oh, my gosh. Wow.
Yeah. So I went all in.
Man, I tell you what, John Wayne, that's one thing I do know about you is that, man, you are – when you commit yourself, man, there's no turning back.
Amen to that.
There's no turning back in all the different things that you started, which we're going to get into some of your entrepreneur ways that you have in your company. And there's your water bottle right there next to you. And your gallantry, we're going to talk about all those different things. But when you commit, man, you're solid on that. But let me ask you this real quick before we go on. We kind of talked about this before the show. Most of the times with my guests, before the show, we have great talks. And you're like, okay, wait, let's bottle that up so we can make sure we talk about it, during the show. And this is something that I know is close to you about, what do you think young men and women should do? After college or when they turn 18, would you recommend them going into the military or what are your thoughts there?
Well, the joke that I always say is the military was the best, worst decision I ever made.
Yeah.
A lot of early mornings, a lot of hungry bellies, a lot of late nights, a lot of lonely and tired and cold and wet. But when you roll all that misery up into this, bundle of memories, it's the most beautiful memory that you could ever have, Jay. Like I just absolutely, fundamentally believe that serving my country was one of the best decisions that I've ever done. And mm-hmm. I fully recommend it. In fact, wish that most people would at least a look towards going to into the military and doing some type of service or some type of, you know, serving something that's bigger than yourself, right? This, you know, I believe that we've gotten away from the compelling necessity to be a part of something bigger than yourself here. You know, the selfie generation that we've kind of gotten into, right?
Right.
The sacrifices that the men and women do to serve this country, to keep it free. You know, I wish everybody could understand what that sacrifice really means.
Okay. Yeah, great. That's great. It just takes you values, you know, and we talked about that as well. So what drew you into the Special Forces?
Well, anything worth doing is worth overdoing. And, you know, I wish I could tell you that, you know, being John Wayne, born on the 4th of July, and, you know, John Wayne did the movie The Green Berets, right? So that I had this long lineage of becoming a Green Beret, you know, but I really didn't. I am 100% Texan because my mom was Mexican and my daddy was a roughneck, right? So I have oil and tacos. That's how I grew up, you know. Wow. But when I got in the Army, you know, I very quickly saw the tip of the spear, right? What the tip of the spear really was, and I was educated to how, you know, great fighting force the Army really has with these Special Forces Green Berets. And actually, to kind of go back to, I like to tell people, what is a Green Beret, right? Because that's one thing that I've learned as a civilian, that a lot of people really don't know what a Green Beret is, and the answer is not that we're like Navy SEALs. Right, we don't have good hair and publicists to write books. That was a joke. Yeah. But you know, the motto of a Green Beret is called the quiet professional. That's what we are, and we live and breathe by that motto. We are taught day one to shut your mouth and let your job be a voice for you rather than telling people how awesome you are. You know, and what we were designed in 1965 or the mid-60s when JFK let us, you know, don the Green Beret, is we teach them to fight for themselves so we don't have to do it, right? We were going into Vietnam and training them to help fight the Viet Cong. That's where, you know, kind of the infancy of Special Forces started. And what a great mission that is, right? Instead of sending 100 Americans in to go fight for this village, why don't we send 15 Green Berets to train 1,000 and let them fight for themselves. And believe it or not, 60% of all the special operation missions are done by Green Berets. You know, we go the most, we die the most, we get shot the most. Navy SEAL Foundation has 22 million and Green Beret Foundation has 2. Why? We don't fight, you know, we don't write books or do the movies. We fight the war. I found that out and realized very quickly I wanted to at least try it, you know. So another thing people don't realize is you can't say, hey, I'm awesome, I'm going to raise my hand and go try to be a Green Beret and go to Green Beret school. It doesn't work that way. You go to a selection. It's called Special Forces Assessment and Selection. It's 25 days long. You know, again, my other field joke is they got hell week, we have hell month. You know, and so it's 25 days long.
Between the two.
Right. Yeah. It's not a competition, but I'm just saying. But if it was, you know, we won. But, right, there are about 100 people that started the 25-day selection process, and less than 100 were even standing at the end of that 25 days. Well, they choose out of those 100 to get to go to Green Beret school, right? And wow. that's what makes us so precious is that, you know, you get chosen to go to SF school. You don't say, hey, I'm going to do this. And that starts your year and a half training, right? Everything from language training to unconventional warfare. Obviously, you have to do the weapons, you know, stuff, the cool guy stuff, jumping out of planes, blowing stuff up and everything else. But we really are a professional soldier, a grown-up soldier rather than just giving a, you know, an infantry guy that's 18, a bunch of Red Bull and hand grenades. They give us coffee and a book, right? And says, hey, here's how you're going to go into this village and win the hearts and minds.
Wow. You know, like my father-in-law was in the Army for 37 years and did a lot of that same. And I tell you what, they're quiet, but they're lethal. I mean, you know, it's like they're just like the snake in the grass. I mean, they just sits there and waits or the cat that pounces. I mean, it's really unbelievable. And I can't imagine what all you've gone through. And you've done 2 combat tours in Iraq and Afghanistan. So what was similar about these 2 countries? And Also, what was different during wartime?
Well, I'll start off with the similarities. The similarities between Iraq and Afghanistan are people there really want what's, you know, there's a lot of good people. There's a lot of good people in Iraq. There's a lot of good people in Afghanistan. You know, the terrain is immensely different. You know, going in a desert, you know, outside of Baghdad, or the mountains outside of Bagram. You know, the terrain in Afghanistan is just, you know, totally different than the terrain in Iraq. But they are all, you know, somewhat the same to what we want here in America. They want to have good schools for their kids. They want to not worry about getting blown up going to the, you know, to the grocery store. They want prosperity. You know, it's definitely to say it's an enormous culture, you know, difference is an euphemism. It really is a vast difference in how they look at life, on how, you know, they treat each other, you know, and so the differences there is just vast.
Yeah, I got you. Mm-hmm. So on April 6, 2008, there's something that happened, obviously life-changing for you. You lost your right leg in a sniper fire during the Battle of Smock Valley. After you were shot, just tell us a little bit about that. What happened and what happened? Just kind of give us a blow by blow. There's a friend of mine that got shot in the back and going into a building in Afghanistan, and I met him at the Helicopters for Heroes deal, and man, just these stories and yeah. Can you kind of go through that? Because, you know, I've told that story a couple of times to people and they're just like, oh my gosh. And they can't really, you really can't see it from a standpoint of us civilians, because I mean, you know, the biggest thing we have is maybe with our boss or maybe with our, you know, people we work with or our mate or something. And we have a little bit of a, you know, but other than that, I mean, it's really not. So can you take me through, can you kind of take us through that as much as you want to? I don't want you to relive, you know, as much.
No, that's fine. But, in fact, I, you know, to your point about having, you know, civilian problems, my wife always hates, you know, whenever we're either late to church or, you know, kids appointment, I say, hey, babe, we're not getting shot at, you know. Yeah, yeah. Come on, you know, this is not a big problem. I've seen a big problem.
Yeah. And you said that before. You go, Jay, he goes, I don't really care what you ask me. I've been shot at. So just go ahead and ask me questions you want to before the show. Yeah, right. I think I can handle it. And I said, yeah, I know.
Yeah. But no, see, you know, April 6th will forever be a day that, you know, that I will remember, right? On that day, ODA 3336 was the Special Forces team that I was fortunately assigned to. We were a Green Beret team that was, in my mind, one of the best that I've ever been, you know, I've been a part of, a bunch of absolute great Americans, patriots, just, you know, what we like to call barrel-chested freedom fighters, right? That's what we were full of, and we were a very, very close team. The difference between, you know, what we have there and what you had to get on the outside is, you know, we didn't like each other, we loved each other. Mm-hmm. You know, and it didn't mean we got along, right? It didn't mean we all saw eye to eye. You know, you may have an a-hole on a team, but nobody else is going to say that, right? You better not call him that. You know, he's our guy. And so that's the mentality we lived with. And we were with 60 Afghani counterparts. So that was my point earlier about what is a Green Beret. You know, we didn't just go on a mission. We went on a mission with 60 other Afghani commandos. And it was a fighting force that was actually new to the Afghani National Army. The commando units was actually a lot like Green Berets, where there was a selection process. There was a schoolhouse that you had to go through after that, and which is obviously why they were attached to us. And we had very good rapport with the commandos. In fact, we had a celebrity. His actual name was Muhammad Ali. I never will forget, you know, looking at the roster. I said, hold up, Muhammad Ali, raise your hand, you know, and see a little –
John Wayne, Muhammad Ali.
Exactly. And we had another guy that I called him Joe Pesci. He looked just like Joe Pesci, little, you know, short brown guy with a beard, you know, and going to formation every morning, I'd look at him and say, Joe Pesci. He'd give me a thumbs up. He'd say, John Wayne.
That's funny.
So we did have great rapport with them, and we we're on a mission to kill, capture Haji Gafur. That was our high-value target that we were going after. you know, it was a tier one, tier zero level target that is, you know, it was a Bin Laden type target that was the reason why he was so high. He was in charge of the HIG. If you Google it, I can't pronounce it, but it's the same thing as Al-Qaeda, Taliban, you know, Islamic radical extremists. That's what they were. And what he would do, or they would do, their organization, is they would go into gem mines. You know, so Afghanistan's a very, very large exporter of gems, stars, sapphires, rubies, and things of that nature. And he would go into that mine and say, hey, I'm in charge now. And then all the money from that export product, he would fund the HIG with. You know, and so that's why he was on that tier one, tier zero level. And I always say you got to put yourself in that, you know, on that morning, right? So it's April 6th. You're in the mountains of Afghanistan. Mountains of Afghanistan is just like the mountains of Colorado or Utah, wherever that is. It's very cold in the morning still, you know, in April, right? You still got snow on the ground. It's, you know, you get below freezing at night. Highs are in the 40s and you know, we walk out that morning and we had a little bit of drizzle. So we didn't even think we were really going to go because, you know, helicopters don't like to fly, right? Whenever you're dealing with rotary aircraft, any type of inclement weather comes in, you know, the majority of time because of risk, you know, assessments, you know, we get stood down. So that was the first reaction that I had. But we still got kitted up. We did everything like we normally did. We got with our commandos, and I never will forget, you know, being on that helicopter. You know, a helicopter wants to do two things, fly or crash, right? You're either taking off or you're coming down. It doesn't like to hover, right? So when it's sitting on that ground and those rotors are spinning and it's not going anywhere, you have a very violent, you know, if you've ever taken off in a helicopter, you know what I'm talking about, where it's just sitting there rocking. Well, so imagine having that the headphones on, you know, with all your guys in this, you know, CH-47, which is it's called a Chinook. It's like a bus with two rotors. And we were, you know, very, very close in proximity to each other in there, you know, waiting, you know, you're hearing the radio traffic from the pilot to the ground force commander to, you know, seat of commander, you know, getting real time updates on whether the guy's still there, you know, what's the weather doing. So it was very kind of a chaotic and suspenseful, you know, moment until you hear the three words that every cool guy wants to hear: execute, execute, execute. Right. And that's whenever the wheels lifted up. And right, that's whenever, you know, I always say that's when we were living, you know, not like the Matthew McConaughey LIVIN, you know, wasn't that living, you know, right, when those wheels lifted, Jay, I didn't know if I was going to be alive when they landed. Think about that.
Yeah.
Right. If you don't know you're going to be alive the next minute, the next hour, the next day, the next month, you're living. You're embracing every moment. You're looking at that sun coming up and knowing that that's God's magnificent creation, that you're going to make sure that you, you know, take that in. The trees blowing in the wind, the brother to your left and right, you look at them and you say good morning and you mean it. Right. And so that's what I mean by living. You're just embracing every moment. And obviously we know what we're going to go do, right? We're there to go do bad things to bad people. And you're going through your checklist mentally of all right, when you get on the target, you got to get this, 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 and this. And
every day, I mean, you went through this every day or however many of these trips that you went on. I mean, it's not just like once a year or once when you went over there. I mean, it's like you're going through these emotions every day. I'm wondering,
right,
hey man, is this gonna be it? Is this okay? So those wheels are up, okay, here it goes. And man, you're just thinking your checklist, but you're also wondering, man, is this gonna be the last day? And see your wife and your kids and see your kids grow up, and man, I'm sure that's just an emotional
roller coaster.
Oh my gosh, right. Absolutely.
And we call it op tempo, when the operational tempo is so as quick as it is there. You know, you really don't have the philosophical, I may die today, right? You don't have, or this is dangerous what I'm doing. It's more of a not even spiritual, kind of, right? You just are embracing the moment. That's really, you really do get one with the moment and those that are around you. And you just focus on the task at hand, right? What is my job and how do I do it the best that I can? And how do I help the person to my left and right? It really does come down to that simplicity on the battlefield. It's kind of what I've done in business as well. You know, if I turn the camera, you'll see my whiteboard, right? What are my action items today? What is my strategic overview, where we're going? It's pretty simplistic whenever you think about what, you know, as a company-wide we need to do, but tactically today, right now, what is my 25-meter target, meaning what do I need to do in the next 30 minutes, right?
Right.
And when you break it down like that, it really does help accomplish the mission. But back to April 6th, you know, wouldn't Mike Tyson eloquently say, everybody's got a plan to get punched in the mouth?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So I never will forget whenever we got to the objective and we were going to land, you know, we get that green light, go, 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 and you're going to go run out the back of this helicopter. Well, there were a bunch of boulders and the terrain was so mountainous where the helicopters were supposed to land that they actually couldn't land. So we had to jump, you know, 10 feet out of the back of this helicopter wearing 60 pounds of kit on, right? So initially we thought we were going to lose 15% of our element because of a sprained knee, a twisted ankle, you know, something that's going to happen when you're jumping on a boulder. Fortunately that didn't happen and we didn't receive any injuries at that time. And we got our guys and started, you know, going toward the objective. The objective was built in the side, of a mountain, right? We're 10,000 feet above sea level. You know, there was no Lowe's or Home Depot anywhere nearby. So there wasn't, you know, lumber or anything that they could build stairways or ADA compliant, you know, rails or anything like that. We were going up goat paths. You know, if you've ever been to the mountains, you got little switchback goat paths that they crawl on. And we were using our brother's equipment and knees and shoulders to, you know, hoist them up to the next level. And I was a SALT team 1 leader along with Dave Sanders, and we had an interpreter and about 8 commandos, and we were probably 40 yards from our element to the first house into this village. And Jay, that's when we got opened up on, you know, we got opened up on with an avalanche of gunfire. And I don't say avalanche lightly to make me sound cool, beat my chest, you know, make it more dramatic than what it was. We were receiving so much fire that we've never received before. And to put it in perspective, within the first 5 minutes, we already had our lead interpreter, CK. He got shot in the throat and died on impact, right?
Wow.
Dylan Bear was our radio transmitting operator. He got shot in the hip. The initial assessment to him was 20 minutes to live. Well, I knew I wasn't going to get off the mountain in 20 minutes. I knew that we weren't going to suppress the enemy to get a medevac bird to get there in 20 minutes, get him on the medevac bird. So I knew that he was probably dead, right? Mm-hmm. And then within the first 10 minutes, so we had CK was dead, Dylan is dying. Well, Luis Morales was shot in his leg, which was our intelligence officer that was next to Dylan. So we had 2 injured, 1 dead within the first 10 minutes of the first, you know, that bullet being fired. And that's why I say avalanche of gunfire.
Wow.
At that point, you know, I realized.
Is there 10 people on this, on the tour, 10 people, or is there?
Yeah, to put it into perspective here, so you have different elements, right? We don't all like, it doesn't look like a football team, right, where you just got 11 guys going forward. Yeah. We have different elements. So we had SALT Team 1, which was myself, Dave Sanders, and about 8 commandos. You had the command and control element behind us. Again, think about these people kind of sprawled out like ants going up the switchbacks, right?
Yeah.
We had SALT Team 1, command and control, which was about another 5 to 7 commandos with the commander, which Kyle Walton, he's our, you know, team leader, the guy who's in charge of the, you know, battlefield. We had our intelligence officer, which was Luis Morales. We had Dylan Bear, which was the RTO. We had the Air Force combat controller, right? The combat controller that is his job to talk to the aircraft on the battlefield. And then we had some commandos. Behind them was Assault Team 2. And then behind them was, we called it the heavy weapons. You had your RPGs, your heavy machine guns, your 249s, 240s, and stuff like that. So going into this village, the way we would get to the target being the actual, you know, house we're going to, you know, we have to obviously pass houses in order to get to that one. Mm-hmm. I would go into the first building, lock it down, secure it. Command and control would come up to me, and then Assault Team 2 would bypass us and go to the next house, and we would just leapfrog into where we're going. Does that kind of get an idea of how we were going to get?
Yeah, I was wondering why the big military artillery was at the end, but now I see why if you're leapfrogging. you know.
Right. Yeah, we got to – the big guys are slow.
Yeah.
Right? So we got to get the fast guys, get in there quick and lock something down and then bring somebody in there so we can have that.
Yeah.
But after Dylan and Luis was shot, well, we had two guys shot, and it takes two people to help one person. So that's six people, you know, out of the really only 10 Americans that are on the side of the mountain at this point, right? Because you still had the assault team too and the heavy weapons on the ground at this point. Well, we realized we couldn't move forward, so we couldn't scale up the mountain. So what we did from that point is pretty much initiate Operation Human Shield. You know, Assault Team 1, we came from our position to the command and control element. That is where all of the majority of the fire was aimed towards. And it was our job to catch bullets and keep Dylan and Luis alive while Ron actually, you know, our medic, our only medic on this battlefield, you know, keeps them alive and does their job. And that worked pretty good for a couple hours, you know. So I was about 2.5 to 3 hours into this firefight. And, Jay, I'll never forget moving from one position to the next, you know, felt excruciating pain. I felt forward. And when I rolled over, my leg was just hanging at a 45-degree angle only by an inch of flesh.
Gosh, inch of flesh.
Only by an inch of flesh, yeah. Both bones were severed, and it was, you know, almost amputated immediately. And you know, that's when I cried. You know, I didn't do this heroic Green Beret thing where I told my sergeant I didn't have time to bleed, right? I didn't do this, you know, the thing that you see on the movie to where, you know, you just, you know, act like, oh, I didn't even know I was shot. No, I screamed, I cried, I yelled out. I did every human thing that you would think would happen. And that's whenever I keep going back to, you got to just have the simplicity, right? Okay, what is the one thing that I can affect? Well, obviously, I had to help my leg. You know, you want to be a doctor? I'll teach you how to be a trauma doc right now. Blood's got to go round and round. Air's got to go in and out. That's it. On the battlefield, if you can keep blood going round and round and air going in and out, you can be a trauma doc. And wow. With my leg shot like that, I realized that I needed to stop the bleeding is what I'm trying to say.
How could you ever stop the bleeding on something like that?
Well, we used a tourniquet, and they're actual, I mean, great medical devices to have on the battlefield that obviously saved my life that day. You know, I never will forget, you know, thinking to, you know, I live by the creed that I'm dumb, but I know I'm dumb, so that almost makes me smart, right? So I was looking at my leg, and I was like, all right, John, you're a little jacked up right now. You might want to ask for some help. And I asked Dave Sanders, the Green Beret that was next to me. I said, hey, Dave, come help me out, and you know, we put my tourniquet on, and while we were turning it to see, you know, how tight it needed to be, I never will forget thinking, man, this looks just like the movies. Spielberg got it right, you know, because it was just burning out just like the movies did.
Yeah.
And but we got it tight enough, and I kept fighting after that, you know. And whenever I continued to fight, I never will forget what it felt like, that pain, because my foot was still, you know, hanging. So whenever I scooted my butt to another position, it would catch a rock and it would just flop. And, you know, not to get too gory, but bottom line, it hurt. Oh, and at that point, I realized I needed to do something to fix that. So I just grabbed my leg and I folded it into my groin and held it between my thighs.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, so I kicked my own ass, right? I guess that's what my friends always say. Yeah. You know.
Man. And such a great attitude you always have about this. And you always – smiling about it or laughing about it, or you're busier than a one leg, you know. So I mean, all the different things that you say about it is just incredible. I don't mean to make light of this situation right here, because this is something that I mean, 98%, 99% of the world will never even think about or see or anything. And this is such a great, I mean, honor for you to make it and for you to tell the story for people like me that have never experienced that, but just something that, you know, honored to be on the to have you on the show and tell this story, because there's a lot of listeners out there that are just going to go, oh my gosh, what they have to go through. So I don't
well, it's, you know, it's becoming a Green Beret has nothing to do with your physical. I mean, yes, you have to be strong, yes, you have to be fast, but it's all mental, brother. It's all between the ears, and that's what makes us elite, is our capacity to know this is going to be hard and to go punch in the mouth. right? To know that we're going to, that this is a life, you know, changing situation we're put in, and not let it overwhelm us. And that's just how we are. In fact, you know, at one point I never will forget, you know, so, you know, back to the battlefield, you know, I'm kicking my own ass again, right? And I never will forget, we had the morphine injectors, right? The morphine injector, which is a little pin when you put into your, you know, body, a needle comes out and injects morphine.
Yeah.
Well, I always thought my doc was going to tell me the right thing to do. So I asked Ron at the time, I said, "Hey Ron, what side down?" Right. And he told me purple. And when I went to go put the purple side down, the red side went to my thumb. So I injected morphine into my thumb. And on the objective, I throw it at Ron. I was like, "You had one job, Ron, one job." You know, I said, "When I see you, Ron, I'm going to beat you with my leg." And we're all laughing, just like we are right now.
Oh, my God.
We're actually laughing on the battlefield because of me cussing my doc, you know, telling him he sucks at life and I'm going to beat him with my leg. And you know, since I'm on him, there was another time I never will forget. I you know, it had to have been an hour after getting shot. You know, I had my morphine in my thumb, I had my tourniquet on, and I never will forget thinking, I'm the only one keeping me alive right now, right? The medic hadn't come check me out or anything. He's been worried with Dylan and Luis. So I said, "Hey Ron, come check me out, you know, do the whole, you know, medevac thing that you're supposed to do." And to this day, I'll never forget, he was working on Dylan at the time on his hip, right? And he poked his head over there and said, "You're good." He gave me a little thumbs up and said, "You're good." I was like, "F you, Ron." I'm like, "That's not good. I know me good, Ron. This is not good
this
right
is
now.
Not good, yeah. There's something missing here. There's something wrong here."
Yeah. You know, but obviously, he knew me well enough to know that if I was coherent enough to yell and had enough air in my lungs to you know, have that energy, that I wasn't dying, right? Dying people don't yell.
Yeah.
And so he knew what he was doing, but, you know, again, I didn't feel special at the time.
Golly. Wow.
But no, so I'll go through us getting out of there real quick, because I know it's a little long-winded. It's a 6.5-hour firefight, right? So I'm trying to break it down as quickly as possible. You know, at that point, I saw my team sergeant get shot. That was within 5 feet from me, and that was kind of the turning point of the battle. You know, whenever Scott Ford was shot, he was actually shot twice, once in the breastplate, and he got shot in the left arm. And that's whenever they opened up almost every air asset in theater to our location. And we just had, you know, A-10 Warthogs to Apaches to AC-1. I mean, they had everything. And what they would do is they'd drop a big bomb. You know, when I say a big bomb, I'm talking about 500-pound, 1,000-pound. They even dropped a 2,000-pound JDAM on top of our head. And to put things into perspective again, danger close for a 2,000-pound JDAM is is roughly, you know, 10 football fields stacked end to end. Well, they were dropping us 100 yards on top of our heads.
Oh, my God.
And that talk about, you know, the mushroom cloud and, you know, the smoke just blacking out the sun. That was a concussion that you never felt before. And the good news is that would actually have the enemy stop shooting during that time, and we would fall off the backside of the cliff, you know, all the way back to the base of the mountain. And then the first medevac bird actually came in. I got drugged through a river, you know, again. So all of this has happened now. In order to get to the landing zone, right, a helicopter landing zone's got to have enough clearance for those rotors to come down. Well, the best place to do that was in the middle of the valley. Well, I had to get drugged through that river. Again, 10,000 feet above sea level, it's just melted ice and snow that is that consists of that river, that runoff, right? And so I almost died of hypothermia, it felt like, you know, that medevac bird. And I never will forget looking up, you know, that medevac bird coming down. Well, the pilot actually got shot. I have audio of the pilot saying, I'm hit, I'm going south. And so the aircraft actually flew away. So we're getting shot again. And we had to go back through the river to the base of the mountain for the second medevac bird to come in for us to get cross-loaded on that one. That one took off. It took so much damage to get us out of there. We had to do an emergency landing, so we couldn't even go there. That was, so now we're on our third aircraft to get us back to the hospital. And that's actually what took us to get out of there.
Wow. Oh, my gosh. Wow. What a story. I know it's wrapped up. And there is a – and you also have a book, right, called the
– Yeah.
No Way Out, A Story of Valor in the Mountain, you know, in Afghanistan. So, I mean, people need to go and read the book. Who's going to play you in the movie? Who would you like to play in the movie? You know, John Wayne.
Billy Bob Thornton. John, how about that guy?
Who's that?
Billy Bob Thornton.
There you go. Billy Bob Thornton. I like that. That's a good thought. Yeah. He's from, I guess he grew up in Dallas. Didn't he grow up in Dallas?
Yeah,
anyway. So he didn't grow up in Groesbeck. But,
no.
So tell about the Silver Star. So then later on, you finally made it out. I mean, this is mm-hmm. – How did you go from getting out? How long did you stay in the hospital? Did Jeff stay in the hospital there? Were you transported back at any time? Or tell us about the next 30 days or so.
Yeah, so going back to, you know, the quiet professional, if you notice, I didn't bring up any of the accolades or anything like that. That's just the type of, you know, people that we are, you know. But since you asked, so the outcome of that battle, you know, there was basically – you know, 6.5-hour firefight where 70 danger close air strikes. There was 15 Americans along with 60 Afghani counterparts went up against 250, you know, insurgent fighters. You know, two medals of honor were awarded for that day. The Air Force Cross was awarded for that day. 8 Silver Stars and 8 Purple Hearts. And the best statistic of all, zero American killed.
How awesome is that? Wow. What about the first guy that got shot in the neck?
He was an interpreter, so he wasn't an American.
Okay.
Right? So we had an Afghani die, and then we had two Afghani commandos die.
Wow.
So just imagine the overwhelming odds that we faced that day to come out of that victorious.
I can't believe that. You having to be on your third bird, you know, getting out of there on the medic, and they're after you guys.
Yeah.
I mean – it's not like they're just kind of sitting around shooting every once in a while. I mean, they're on you like stink on whatever you say.
Right, right.
You know, and so, man, and to have no casualties is unbelievable. I mean, it's all.
Yeah, like there was, you know, we had 9 casualties, which were wounded people, you know, but we only so it was 8 Purple Hearts Americans, and the 9th was the commando, right?
Wow.
That was killed. But, again, Jay, I'm just so humbled and honored to be a very, and I do mean very small part of that day, you know, of a organization that, you know, of a team of great Americans that just absolutely, you know, when I say they met the challenge that day, they met the challenge, you know, where Matt Williams being awarded the Medal of Honor, to where Ron Scherer was awarded the Medal of Honor, and all of the brothers that are next to me, you know, this is their story. It's not mine. It's, you know, I'm by no means do I try to make anything out of this other than just the, you know, humble gratitude for being a part of it. But back to the hospital, right? I never will forget waking up in Bagram the next day. You know, it was a terrifying time, right? Because I never will forget looking at ceiling tiles, you know, scared to look down. And the reason why is because I knew exactly why I was there. You know, I didn't have memory loss. I didn't have any type of gap in what happened. You know, I knew what was going to be probably when I looked down, it was going to be one-legged, right? And I was procrastinating to do that. And I never will forget that feeling when I finally did look down and only saw 1 foot sticking up. You know, Jay, it was the most humbling, most demoralizing, debilitating, you know, terrifying feeling I've ever had in my life.
Yeah.
You know, it was that inevitability of learning that meaning of the word can't.
Right.
I can't won't. Right.
Right.
And no matter what I do, because before then, as a 26-year-old Green Beret, I knew I can do anything I set my mind to. I can do it. I know I can. I know I'll work it. I'll, you know, do whatever I got to take. But, now I know no matter how much effort I give, I'm not going to be able to walk it. And to overcome that was definitely a monumental task, right?
Right, right. Wow, what a great story. What a great story. And to know then, I mean, you don't – thinking about where you're going to be or what's your life's going to be like with one leg, you know, not knowing. I mean, and now that you've lived it for – you know, several years, you understand now and you are where you are today, which is unbelievable. But, and two, you know, going through this whole entire history and the whole thing, what's been some of the biggest things that you've learned about where you are today compared to what you thought at the time going, oh my gosh, I'm afraid to look down. Oh man, I do have one leg compared right. to where you are today and what's helped you.
Well, it's definitely made me a more empathetic person, a more compassionate person, a more humble person, right? That's a whole lot of humble pie to eat.
Oh my gosh.
For a very accomplished, soldier. And one of the best things that has helped with me is learn my place with God. You know, before the arrogance, and it wasn't arrogance, it was just confidence, right? I never was an arrogant person and thought that I was better than anyone, but I definitely was confident in what my abilities were. And, after having one leg, I've realized that this is God's plan. And that no matter what I do, it's still God's plan.
Yeah.
And it's his timeline that I'm on. And when good things happen, it's on his timeline. And that really took the why me's away, Jay, right? Because I had the why me, God, why me, right? I'm a good guy. I don't pay, I don't beat my wife. I pay my bills. I got a good job. Why did you do this to me? And to really give it all to him, to realize that this is the path that he's chosen for me. I really turned that question to, what are you teaching me?
Yeah.
Right. What lesson do you have to learn? Like in this COVID environment that we're in right now, with business and family and life, it definitely has been a big struggle, right? All the way around. And it's that lesson from losing this leg has really helped me, one, stay positive, right? Because that's definitely a mindset that you have to have in trying times. You got to stay positive to know that this too shall pass, but also stay focused and not let all the noise, cloud your judgment. So my relationship with God is definitely one of the best things that's happened with the amputation. The next thing is obviously with my family. I found out very quickly that my wife is I call her the Green Beret of moms. Mm-hmm. She is the best thing that's ever happened. God put her in my life for a reason. And to have her to rely on, to have her that can get me through that, it's made me a better husband, right? It's made me a better father. And quite frankly, why we're here today, it's you, Americans, right? The great Americans that just truly want to say thank you for my service. That's why I don't say you're welcome when you say thank you. I say you're worth it. You're worth losing this leg. You're worth this the holidays that I've missed. You're worth, the names that are embroidered on the center console of my truck of Green Berets and SEALs that are dead. Okay. That relationship between Americans and the military is one of the most precious relationships that we have. Right. The thank yous that I get from y'all is why I was the first amputee to graduate Green Beret Sniper School, right? It was why I've started, I'm the entrepreneur that I am today, because you validated that sacrifice. You made it worth it. That's right. Why I say again, I don't say you're welcome. I say you're worth it.
Yeah, that's great. That's great. And that's a great, if you go on, not now, I mean, go on YouTube and listen to Jay Young and John Wayne Walding. But if you just Googled or YouTubed John Wayne Walding, there's a great, a couple of interviews about why me, and
right.
it is all about God, and it's all about, it's such a different mentality today from with the Vietnam War. Why? And do you think that the United States government and in the service, they've kind of taught us something about learning about people coming back from Vietnam and the, mm-hmm. Hey man, it's all about me. And I'm, and back to the Vietnam days compared to today's people that come back and are just so thankful to be able to serve, because there's not anybody that I've heard that has said, hey, it's all about, you should be thankful that I went over and fought for my country and, you boys down there and, all that stuff. Right. Nobody does that. And you guys, I mean, even you lost your leg. I mean, for your country, and you're coming right. back and you're going, man, it's all about God. It's all about, what a great attitude. What do you think helped in developing that attitude?
Well, what I just told you, that's what helped develop that attitude was my faith in God, to know that this is his plan, to be quite honest with you, sobriety. Sobriety was one of the best things. It's the best gift that I've ever given myself. And I'm not talking just narcotics. I'm even talking alcohol, right? To get a clear head, you know, a focused mind. You know, I've seen and done things that it will forever affect me, right? And from being blown up and having traumatic brain injury to post-traumatic stress and all the challenges of being an amputee, right? That's a big soup sandwich that I just, you know, don't ever want to eat. And man, to get that clear head and that focused mind to focus on myself and you know, get that, you know, because charity starts at home and self-care is where you do that. Jay, that was one of the best gifts I've ever given myself.
Yeah. Is the gift of sobriety?
Yes. Oh, absolutely. You know, because all that alcohol or narcotics are, you know, let's put it into perspective. So I'll give you, you know, I'll be real with you right now. You know, whenever I got shot, you know, they were prescribing me pain medication, right? Rightfully so. I just got my leg and I shot off it. And as an outpatient, not in the hospital, so this is post-injury as an outpatient, you know, I was prescribed 12 different, you know, medication from anti-psych meds, anti-inflammatory meds, anti-anti meds. I mean, it was a whole bunch of medication. And let's, you know, to put it into perspective, do you know what a Percocet is?
Yeah. No.
Right.
No.
Everybody's heard.
No. Okay. What is it?
All right. So what a Percocet is, it's 325 milligrams of acetaminophen. That's Tylenol.
Okay.
And it's 5 milligrams of Oxycontin. Right. That's the opioid that is inside Percocet. Well, they were giving me 80 milligrams of Percocet or of Oxycontin 3 times a day on top of everything else.
Oh, my gosh.
And it was making me a zombie. You know, it really was. I never will forget. You know, I always tell a story during a speaking engagement of how I watched my son fall. And it wasn't because, you know, he fell while I was crying. It's because I knew I was too doped up to catch him.
Wow.
You know, that was one of the big turning points for me to get off their narcotics. You know, and then, you know, to coming away after that, you know, I still hurt every day, but that day I chose pain, right? I can either be doped up or hurt, and I'd much rather be myself, you know, than being pain than be doped up and be a zombie. And it was one of the best decisions I ever made. And then, you know, for the alcohol, you know, I always say I was consistent. I wasn't excessive. You know, I never bought more than a 6-pack. I never had more than a bottle at the house, you know, of whiskey. And if I drank, I drank a couple beers, no more than, you know, again, I never had more than 3 or 4 a night. But I drank, Dave, you know, 5-6 days a night, you know, and on the weekends, you know, I would celebrate a weekend. And I was good, you know, and quitting drinking is what I call going from good to great.
Hmm.
You know, because that's a lot of what my friends say whenever I tell them I quit drinking is that I'm good. Well, I was good too, right? When I drank, I became a Green Beret. I had a job, paid a bill, didn't beat my family. I was good. But when I got off alcohol and I really, you know, because what I've learned now is alcohol really just hides the truth, right? Everybody says, I just need to relax. I'm going to have alcohol. Well, you're just hiding what you don't want to deal with at the moment, right? So when you take that you know, illusion or that hide away, it makes you look inward, right? It makes you focus on yourself. And some people don't want to look at that. And myself included at the time, right? I didn't want to look at the demons that I had and the problems that I had. But whenever, you know, here's why I quit drinking. You know, one of my buddies died.
Mm.
And I did what I was supposed to do, what I thought was drink, right? You know, Chris loved Jack Daniels, so I drank a bunch of Jack Daniels because that's what he did. And I woke up the next morning kind of mad and said, you know what? Enough. If his life matters that much to me, well, by God, I owe it to him to live well.
Yeah.
And that's what I started to do that day, living well. And everything I've been telling you about was focused on living well. And man, having that sobriety has just really made me – I'm a loving husband now, just not a husband. You know, I'm an involved father now. Not just the father, right? When I come home, I don't grab a beer and turn on the news or a sports center or whatever. Right. I come home, I look at my kids and say, how was your day?
Right.
You know, I have to talk to my wife and say, hey, how can I help, right? And it's just been the best gift that I've ever given myself.
That's great. That's a great story. Love that. Yeah. Love that story. And we've talked a lot about sobriety on the show in the past about addictions and because I've been sober since 94, probably before you were born. No, not before, but close. But I've been sober for a long time, and the reason why same thing. I just want to clear my head. I want to be able to wake up in the morning and not feel like, man, I'm gonna waste a whole day or suppress my thoughts and actions. And all that. But
Jay, it's awesome. I wish people would realize how much of an illusion alcohol really is. Yeah. I really do, because it is, you don't have to have fun to do it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I quit drinking twice. Well, probably about 400 times, but the two big times, and the last time I did was on January 1st, 1994, after being drunk December 31st, 1993. But yeah. I was still a director, one of the directors of the Dallas Margarita Society, that puts on the Dallas Margarita Ball, which is one of the biggest fundraisers in Dallas, all because I love the people and love being around that, even though I didn't drink anymore, and I was still director for 5 years sober. And there's floating margaritas everywhere, but yeah, it was something that I love for people. But anyway, so I want to talk about this. I want to finish up, because I know you got to go, and I want to be respectful of your time. And let's just talk about Gallantry Global Logistics. Yeah. And the company you founded. Tell us a little bit about that and how you started it and what does it do now, and if there's something we can help in making a connection or two.
So, Jay, I really appreciate you asking me that question. You know, as an entrepreneur, I was very fortunate to sell the first company that I started, you know, that was probably 5 years into it. The frustration I had, so it was a gun company, and the frustration I had is I never saw the runway to where we could take off and actually hit success, right? Financial success. You know, it was just a grind, and the industry is just a bad industry to be in. And God just put a mentor in my life by the name of Rex Kurzius. And Rex, I never will forget, he just reached out to me the day I sold my company. You know, and by the way, I didn't sell it like Elon Musk sells something. Right. So I had about a 90-day window that I need to figure out a job. And Rex just reached out and said, "Hey, Tom Lane, what's up, man?" I said, "Oh, man, I just sold my company. Are you hired?" You know, as a joke. And so he brought me over to his office and he mentored me about, "Hey, tell me what you want to do." And that's what I told him. I said, "Look, I don't mind doing the work, but I also want to make sure that effort has an end game, right? That where's my exit going to look at one point?" And he said, "Well, I got a good friend of mine by the name of Ken Beam. He's this great American patriot that just loves to help veterans. Got a logistics company. And I'll bring a long story short. We partnered together to form Gallantry. You know, when I was awarded the Silver Star, on the back of it, it says for Gallantry in Action. So that's my, you know, homage to that part of my life. And the idea of this company is to provide the next mission for veterans. I want to be the largest veteran hire in the state of Texas. And we're going to do that by selling freight. You know, the focus of this company is shipments of consequence, right? We are a service disabled veteran owned, and obviously I'm a Hispanic owned company, so we're going toward, you know, the diversity spin with the large Fortune 100 companies and focusing on project related stuff, the trade show type stuff, the high white glove, the time definite type sensitive, you know, freight that is. It's really about 10% of the entire logistics world, but that world is I call it the special operations of shipping. You know, that's the world that we like to play in.
Yeah, well, that's great. Good for you.
Yeah, we're real excited. We hired some rock stars that's on the team, and you know, we've got both the minority certification from the MSDC and the VOBA's veteran, you know, Service Disabled Veteran Enterprise, and so we're ready to go.
Good. That's great. That's great. Good for you.
Yeah.
Good for you. And so you also have a water company. I think there's a water bottle pretty close to you there.
Yeah, yeah. So, Alex, you know, after during all of this, I had a good friend of mine, Zach Smith, that reached out to me about a product that every bottle you buy, we give half back, right? And after a long conversation with Dr. Pepper, they were actually in it at one point and helping us with their marketing team and everything. You know, then they got bought by Keurig. But what happened to all of that was Live to Give. And, you know, every bottle you buy, we're going to give half the profits to veteran and first responder charities. You know, it's electrolyte and mineral, you know, water, just like an Essentia or a Smart Water or, you know, Life Water, anything like that. But you just, you know, we're going to give you, the everyday American, a way to give back daily.
Wow. Right?
And that's the thing that we're very excited to see where this goes.
Wow, that's great. Good for you. Yeah. And you're in 7-Elevens?
Right. We're around 100 7-Elevens in the DFW Metroplex. We're like Evolve Gym, a local yokel, you know, grocer in McKinney, and a bunch of you know, like Defender Outdoors in Fort Worth and other, you know, we call it third party, you know, stuff. But, you know, because of COVID, obviously, whenever, you know, everybody stopped shopping, you know, stores stopped worrying about new products to put in their stores. And so we're running through that gamut right now, but we still have a great success story with the epidemic. And Jay, again, I'm excited to see the amount of good that we're going to do just by selling water. You know, that's what I'm excited.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Hey, that's great. Good for you. Good for you. And I guess you can go online. Go online and order some.
Live2give.com. It'll have a little map that tells you everywhere, and you can go find it from there. Good. Obviously, we're on Amazon as well, but live2give.com will tell you where you can walk into a store.
Yeah. Okay. What about what are some of your favorite? I mean, I guess I know we support a lot of veterans and charities and 22 Kills, the Helicopters for Heroes, and things of that nature. What are some of your favorite? Do you every year do y'all talk about, you know, Helicopters for Heroes? They choose three a year, and there may be, you know, 20 that are right there. How do you do that?
So the way that we deal with our charities is four different ways. One, we partner with three, and our fourth one is we just started our new one. Not to get too boring, but we've learned that from the business side of a for-profit business doing business with a charity, there's a lot of legalities that in paperwork you have to be. It's called a corporate co-venture agreement. You know, you have to have one of those agreements in every single state with every single charity.
Oh, right? Wow.
So we're kind of finding this out the hard way when we partner with our three charities that I'll tell you about here in a second. But then because of that, we as a company decided we're going to start Live to Give Foundation. And we will obviously run everything through that. You know, everything's going to work pretty much the same, but from the backside of it, it's going to look a little different, right?
Right, right.
But the charities that we partnered with was the Folds of Honor. I'm sure you're familiar with them. They give scholarships to children of the fallen and the wounded, right? They give $5,000 scholarship. They've been doing a great job. Major Dan Rooney is a great guy. You know, I met him when I was on Fox and Friends a long time ago, and just extremely excited to be partnered with them. Task Force Dagger is another one that we support, which is like the 911 of special operations. You know, that's another one. And then Chive Charities is our third one, right? Because on the bottle, right, it says, you know, supporting those who serve, right? That's what we're about. And that's not just veterans, but that's veterans and first responders. And it was real hard for us to find a first responder charity. And Chive Charities helped us with that. They are a national brand that really helped fill that void for us. Personally, you know, because, again, from a company standpoint, to your point with, you know, Helicopters for Heroes, there's so many great people out there. You know, I'm a very big advocate of the Sentinels of Freedom Foundation. Sentinels of Freedom Foundation give four-year life scholarships to those transitioning military veterans. In fact, that's why you and I met, by the way. That's where, when you went to the meeting that time, that was through Mike Conklin and the Sentinels of Freedom Foundation. They really do a great job of getting, you know, serious veterans that want to transition into, you know, the corporate America. They give them mentors in that area that they want to be in, right? So, and that's why I was there, because they, you know, got me in touch with Darcy Anderson, you know, with Ross and all the people there. And so Sentinels of Freedom is a great organization. Obviously Green Beret Foundation, they do great things for the special forces that are out there, you know, that are the tip of the spear of the United States Army, and they need all the support they can get.
Yeah. Yeah. Man, that's awesome. What a great job. And I know that. So what's a good 2-year, 5-year plan for JWW here? I just love the way you're humble and the way you talk about God, and you're not afraid to talk about God or your sobriety and things of that nature, you know, which is awesome. But what are you looking for? What's your 5-year goal? Let's say if you had a vision board up here, which you probably do somewhere, what would that look like?
Yeah, in fact, I do have the vision board. I'm looking at it right now, and the goal is within the next 5 years to have $50 million worth of revenue running through Gallantry Global Logistics and 15 veteran employees. right? Gotcha. That's the 5-year plan. You know, with logistics, that's something that I feel very confident that we're going to be able to do, you know, with the right support behind it. Again, we got a rock star team that Pegasus lets us piggyback on. And so that's what I'd like to be in 5 years. You know, again, I think it's something that we can do. And from the Live to Give standpoint, you know, I'd like to be the largest water sold in Texas. You know, I really think that's something that, you know, that we can do in Texas, the largest, you know, charity water. Let me rephrase that, you know, product that we can have. Obviously, I'm not, you know, naive to think I'm going to be bigger than Smartwater in 5 years, you know, but I would like to see us be one of the largest, you know, charitable products in the state. And I think that we can do that.
We need to wrap this up, but I'll tell you what, it's been great getting to know a little bit more about you. I mean, yes, I know, sir, that we've known each other for years, and we'll see each other from time to time, but there's nothing like a one-on-one conversation, especially when hey man, you're so open about asking about anything, you know, about, you know, talking about your friend and beating him with your leg or you know, but I mean, you are just so open about it. Where can people go to listen to you or hear you speak, or how can a company get you? I know I'm gonna ask 5 different questions at once, but
right.
I'm good. So where can somebody go and hire you to speak at one of their ordeals? Where's
well, fortunately, those 5 questions can get summed up into one answer, right? Just go to my website.
Go to your website.
A friend of mine, you know, that I'm very close with, he helped me get johnwaynewalding.com. So just go to johnwaynewalding.com, and there's a form there, you know, that you can do requests for speaking, and it has – little bit about me and the stuff that I've done before. I've been very, you know, blessed to have, you know, incredible opportunities to speak, you know, be in the Oval Office with multiple presidents, you know, to be on stage with, you know, some just great people. And you know, I always say I'm not a motivational speaker to where, like, I don't want you to hire me to learn how to increase productivity.
Right.
But if you do want to hear my story and find motivation from, you know, the lessons that I've learned from the life that I've had so far, that I'm definitely humbled to do that.
Yeah, I tell you, it's a great motivational story. It's a great story in itself. Just to just know where you've been, what you've done in the past, and where you're going in the future. And man, I mean, it is such an honor to be with you. And I know you don't you take that lightly. But I tell you what, I mean, for you to fight for my freedom and take on as much as you did, man, it's a blessing for all of us to get to know you. And I'm sure everybody here has just really been so blessed to have listened to this interview with you. And you know, for that, man, we really do thank you.
Yeah, you're worth it.
Yeah,
you're
thank
worth
you.
It. God bless.
Appreciate that. I appreciate that. And I tell you what, go on, you know, johnwaynewalding.com and anything that you need to know from him. He's a great guy to get to know. He's a great guy to talk to and just to learn more about the service or about where you think your kids should go. And I'm sure John talks to a lot of different smaller groups or groups about with kids, or we'd be glad to. He's one of the biggest guys I know that just doesn't mind helping anybody at any time, throwing in. And you know, sometimes he wants to get paid and sometimes he doesn't, you know, for this one. He loves giving back, and he loves using his, not using it, but just having the opportunity because of what he's done to make people better.
Right.
You know, and that's what his goal is in life. And that's what we really do appreciate, you know? So John, thank you so much for being on the show. Do appreciate
Thanks, Jake. You. I appreciate
Love
it.
You, man. And take care and talk to you soon.
God bless you. Thank you very much for having me.
Thank you. Appreciate that.